Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with some national news on the presidential campaign trail in Iowa from Public News Service. And then, in local politics, hear the results of the San Diego Republican Party's endorsement vote in the 50th Congressional District, currently represented by indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter, and learn about the opponents running against them in the Democratic Party. The governor has signed a law giving SANDAG more time to create its regional transportation plan, and county supervisors have passed two major measures this week. One creates an agency to rival SDG&E, giving consumers a choice on where to purchase power. The other bans sale of vaping and e-cigarette products in unincorporated parts of the county amid a rising public health crisis linked to vaping. Santee's City Council has balked at joining a joint powers authority with some other local cities to provide renewable energy to its residents. Hear why on today's show. Padre Municipal Water District customers will soon be paying higher rates as two rate increases take effect. Mountain lion populations in Southern California are threatened, and now some environmentalists are calling for wildlife bridges to be built across freeways and major highways to protect these big cats and other animals. A much smaller critter, a brush mouse, has tested positive for hantavirus in Julian. Residents of Crest, which was devastated during the Cedar Fire, will soon have a new evacuation route thanks to a vote by supervisors. And in Sacramento, Governor Gavin Newsom has signed several new laws into effect, including a ban on sales and manufacturing of new fur products, and some election reform bills that will impact local candidates' fundraising, affect the redrawing of district lines to prevent gerrymandering, and allow voters to register at polling places on Election Day. La Mesa has adopted an age-friendly program, and El Cajon is testing its sewer system with a non-toxic smoke this month, and we'll have details on today's show. On Crime Beat, hear about a local dentist murdered in Rancho San Diego, an assault on deputies and a sheriff's canine dog in Jamul, and a search for a 12-foot-tall iron horse statue stolen from a feed and tack store in rural El Cajon. On Destination East County, hear about some eerie events coming up this Halloween season, including our own East County Magazine Halloween Party, Haunt Fest in El Cajon, and a Halloween scare trail at a former amusement park. Plus, we'll have a preview of events coming up in November, including an arts and culture festival in El Cajon and the annual Mother Goose Parade. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa. While controversy swirls around yesterday's conflicting quid pro quo statements from Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and President Trump proposing one of his hotels for next year's G7 summit, many presidential contenders seem focused on what's happening at the local level.
Justice is on the ballot. When you look at the fact that teachers in America who are educating our children in public schools are working two and three jobs and leaving their profession because they cannot afford to pay their bills.
California Senator Kamala Harris makes a point most Democratic presidential candidates agree with, that public school teachers are underpaid. 25,000 Chicago educators went on strike yesterday after months of negotiations between the Chicago Teachers Union and the school district, which is short 1,800 teachers. In addition to higher pay and smaller classes, the union is asking for more school resources, particularly support staff like nurses, social workers, and bilingual educators for the almost 1 in 5 Chicago public school students who are English language learners. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot says the district proposed, quote, the best deal that's fiscally responsible, unquote. But that didn't satisfy union leaders and teachers who hit the picket line, joined by students and community members.
No education cuts!
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, a former public school teacher, thinks the Secretary of Education should understand how, as she says, low pay, tattered textbooks, and crumbling classrooms hurt students and educators.
Money for public schools should stay in public schools, not go anywhere else.
Meanwhile, in New Hampshire, retired Admiral and former Pennsylvania Representative Joe Sestak is in the middle of an 8-day walk from one side of the Granite State to the other, 105 miles. Sestak's been at the back of the polls consistently, even as the field has started to shrink. It's not the first time Sestak's campaigned by walking across a state. Here's City Council member Luke Spence of Nevada, Iowa, introducing Sestak at an event earlier this caucus season.
When Admiral Sestak decided to run for the Senate, he walked 422 miles across Pennsylvania, the long way, not the short way, north-south. Anybody can do that. He held a town hall every day, visiting all 67 counties.
Sestak lost that race. Here he is on the road to Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, earlier this week.
It's about 8:30 p.m., 10 more miles to go. Just finished a couple events, so off we head. Some say it's going to be a nor'easter here in New Hampshire. It's going to be an enjoyable walk no matter what. A little wet, but here we go.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
It's rare for a political party to withhold endorsement of an incumbent, but the San Diego County Republican Central Committee has opted against endorsing indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter or any of his three Republican rivals. In the last of four ballots, State Senator Brian Jones received the most votes, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Former Congressman Daryl Issa did not receive a single vote. Radio host Carl DeMaio reportedly won a first ballot round but was later eliminated from consideration. Both Hunter and Issa appealed to the group not to endorse anybody and let voters in the March 3rd primary decide who they want to advance to the November 2020 general election. Endorsing Hunter might have proven problematic for the party if he winds up convicted and imprisoned after his late January trial on 60 counts of federal corruption. He is accused of spending $250,000 in campaign donations on personal uses ranging from family vacations to overnight trips with mistresses. Neither DeMaio nor Issa lives in the district, a fact that might have swayed some to vote for Jones, a state senator and former assemblyman who already represents many of the congressional district's voters since there's a substantial overlap in the state legislative and congressional district boundaries. Jones has a clean record, free of scandals, and a solid conservative voting record. All four candidates were asked questions, and all four took party-line conservative stances on issues ranging from abortion to immigration. In the fundraising department, DeMaio leads with over $1.5 million raised and $1.2 million on hand after expenditures. Neither Issa nor Jones has actually established campaign committees by the filing deadline for the last financial reporting, but Issa, long the wealthiest member of Congress before retiring from the 49th Congressional District, is expected to have the means to self-finance a campaign. Jones has a successful track record of fundraising in his legislative races in the past. Now, any of the three might be better financial bets for the GOP, since Hunter's campaign has struggled financially, ending the last quarter with over $427,000 in debt, while his legal bills continue to mount. Federal law allows him to continue to spend campaign donors' money on his legal defense, since his alleged crimes involve campaign money. In contrast to the fractured fracas of the GOP in the race, Democrats have united to endorse Amar Campanajar, the only Democrat running for the 50th Congressional District. Campanajar has raised over $1.3 million for this election, with over $850,000 in cash on hand from contributors averaging $25. Campanajar, a Hamul resident and business owner who has worked in the U.S. Labor Department and for the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, came within 3 points of ousting Hunter in the 2018 election. The local Republican Party did make other endorsements, notably backing former State Senator Joel Anderson instead of Poway Mayor Steve Voss in the race for county supervisor in District 2, where Diane Jacob leaves office after 25 years due to term limits. Anderson has been a powerhouse fundraiser for the party through the years, serving in the state Senate and Assembly before losing his last election bid for State Board of Equalization. His endorsements include Congressman Duncan Hunter, former Governor Pete Wilson, Santee Mayor John Minto, and State Senator Brian Jones. Steve Voss, however, is expected to mount a vigorous challenge with the endorsement of Supervisor Diane Jacob, as well as Supervisors Kristen Gaspar and Jim Desmond, Sheriff Bill Gore, La Mesa Mayor Rapistathis, El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, the San Diego Police Officers Association, and La Mesa Police Officers Association. The Democratic candidate in the second supervisorial race is Kenya Taylor, a Rancho San Diego resident with a background in behavioral health and community activism. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed Assembly Bill 1730, which gives the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, a two-year extension to develop a regional transportation plan and sustainable community strategy that will provide transportation choices to enhance connectivity, increase safety and sustainability, and improve quality of life. The agency recently unveiled ambitious plans to increase mass transit with a long-term vision of adding high-speed rail and decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. But SANDAG has received pushback from some East County and North County officials over its proposal to cut funding for some long-awaited freeway improvement projects, such as widening State Route 52 and improving safety on State Route 67. SANDAG's executive director, Hassan Ikrata, says AB 1730 is critical to ensure that SANDAG has the time needed to develop a fully integrated, world-class transportation system for the San Diego region that meets the state's ambitious climate goals. The bill does not extend the current timeline for a regional housing needs assessment. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, author of the bill, says signing of the measure will allow county leaders to better prepare for future growth by focusing on smart growth with improved transit options to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, improve air quality, and accommodate the new housing construction needed to keep communities affordable for working families. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The San Diego County Board of Supervisors has voted to impose a one-year ban on sale and distribution of all electronic smoking devices in unincorporated parts of San Diego County. Along with the ban on the devices, the county will also prohibit sale and distribution of all flavored products for smoking, as well as prohibiting smoking in outdoor dining patio areas and establishing a buffer zone outside outdoor dining patio areas. The board's decision came after a long and sometimes emotional public hearing. Supervisors Greg Cox, Nathan Fletcher, and Diane Jacob voted in favor of the ban, while their colleagues Jim Desmond and Kristen Gaspar were opposed. The new policy will not apply to the tobacco used in hookahs. The county's chief administrative officer will return to the board in 60 days with more specifics on enacting the ban, along with a tobacco retail licensing program and a targeted vaping public health awareness campaign. Residents in favor of the ban cited the growing national health concerns over flavored vaping products. According to the county, there have been 19 confirmed deaths and over 1,000 confirmed and probable vaping-associated pulmonary injury cases nationally. Here in San Diego County, there have been 22 confirmed and probable cases of the serious lung illness reported among county residents. Those opposed, however, say that black market THC and marijuana vaping products were the biggest problems. They claim that vaping has helped many people quit smoking regular tobacco cigarettes. Some opponents also said their businesses would be seriously harmed by a ban. Supervisor Desmond calls the ban an overreach by the government that doesn't address the actual issues. Nationally, about 70% of the lung problems have been linked to illegal THC products, but 30% have not. According to Desmond, while there's been a reported 25 vaping-related illnesses in San Diego County, over 95% of those came from THC or CBD products. Desmond says more must be done to keep young people off vaping, nicotine, and other products, but he contends that banning flavored tobacco products and e-cigarettes will cause more people to turn to the black market. He concludes, we should address the enforcement rather than create new ineffective regulations. Advocates of the ban, though, say that in addition to the current public health crisis posed by the vaping-related lung illnesses, vaping has been encouraging an alarming number of young people to get hooked on smoking, a trend that had been reversed in recent decades. According to the California Department of Health, 1 in 5 high school seniors reported vaping in the last month. That's double the number in 2017. Teens and young adults make up about half the people hospitalized in California due to lung injury illnesses tied to vaping, and nearly a third of cases require people to use mechanical assistance to breathe. Public health officials are also concerned about the impacts of nicotine and other chemicals in vaping on young people's developing brains. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Customers of the Padre Dam Municipal Water District will see their rates for both water and sewage increase starting November the 1st and then go up again starting on January the 1st. The Padre Dam District includes the communities of Santee, El Cajon, Lakeside, Flynn Springs, Harbison Canyon, Blossom Valley, Alpine, Dehesha, and Crest. The reason behind the double whammy is a planned 5-year schedule of rate increases approved by Padre Dam's board back in 2017, as well as the County Water Authority increasing rates on its water agencies this year, which is automatically passed on to customers. The latest increase was approved as a consent calendar item during Padre Dam's September board meeting with no public discussion. Notices were included in all customers' bills and are posted on the agency's website. A major reason behind the Padre Dam's board implementing a 5-year series of rate hikes was to pay for upgrading infrastructure to ensure the reliable and safe transmission of water, according to district spokeswoman Melissa McChesney. Those rate increases also ensure that Padre Dam retains its spot as one of the highest charging water districts in the county and for the nation as well. The increases come after a year in which both Padre Dam and the County Water Authority froze their rates. For an average water customer in a single-family house in the western part of the district using 1,100 cubic feet of water per month, the increase means the bill will jump by $3.41 starting on November 1st, according to McChesney. An average water user in the eastern part of the district who pays more due to the higher cost of pumping water in mountainous areas will see their bills jump by $3.93. Once the County Water Authority rates take effect on January 1st, the average water bill for a Western customer will see their bill go up again by 1.4% to a total of $117.39. These examples don't include the increased cost for sewage treatment, which will increase by an average of 3%. The base sewage rate will rise by just over $1.50 for a single-family home. Padre Dam's 24,000 customers may feel they are getting gouged if they compare their water bills to some of their neighbors in the Helix and Lakeside districts, which generally have lower rates. Yet the comparison really isn't fair, McClancy says, because those districts aren't as large as Padre Dam, nor do they face the kinds of challenges posed by sending water over higher elevations and farther distances. Those neighboring districts also have their own supply sources to help offset their costs. Padre Dam imports all of its water supply. In 2016, an analysis done by Food and Water Watch, a national nonprofit, found that Padre Dam's water rates were second highest in the nation, behind only Flint, Michigan, which was dealing with lead contamination in its water supply. Padre Dam has questioned the accuracy of that analysis in the past. However, McChesney confirmed that Padre Dam's rates are near the top among some 24 water districts in our region. Padre Dam is the lead agency spearheading a program of converting millions of dollars of sewage to purified water through an advanced treatment process that produces near-distilled quality water. That program, called East County Water Purification, is expected to generate about 30% of the current water demands in the service area. Other participating agencies are the Helix Water District, the City of El Cajon, and the County of San Diego. The agencies are forming a joint powers authority to finance the cost of the project, estimated at $528 million. In July, the agencies each committed $2.35 million for an interim funding agreement. Padre Dam's budget for the 2019-2020 fiscal year is $96.7 million. Customers can get a more detailed look at how the rate increases will impact their bills by going to www.padredam.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gene Carpenter.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Joining San Diego and cities around the region, the County Board of Supervisors voted 3-2 on Tuesday to establish a community choice energy program in the county's unincorporated areas. Board Chair Diane Jacob called the action a huge victory for consumers who are sick and tired of getting ripped off by SDG&E and are hungry for an alternative. And she added, ratepayers will finally have the freedom to choose where they get their energy. Supervisors Greg Cox and Nathan Fletcher joined Jacob in favoring the program, while conservative colleagues Jim Desmond and Kristen Gaspar voted against it. County leaders said the initiative would bolster the use of renewable energy from sources such as solar, wind, or geothermal. A recent study estimated that during the first 10 years, the Community Choice Program will save $12 million a year for about 179,000 residential and business ratepayers. The study, by a consultant for the county, also predicts that utility rates for those tapping into the program will be at least 2% lower than what SDG&E is expected to charge. The county is looking at a 2022 launch date and is talking with officials in Carlsbad, Del Mar, Solana Beach, and in East County, Santee, along with other governments, about a possible joint powers initiative. The program includes a key environmental goal. By 2030, at least 90% of the energy provided is expected to come from solar and other renewable power sources. The Community Choice Program will cover the county's unincorporated area, which is over 3,500 square miles, including Spring Valley, Alpine, Borrego Springs, Fallbrook, Campo, Jamul, Julian, Lakeside, Mount Helix, Ramona, Rancho San Diego, and more communities. About 20 Community Choice Programs exist in the state of California. San Diego, Chula Vista, La Mesa, and several other local cities are preparing to launch their own initiatives to provide cleaner and more affordable energy for their residents.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Gerald Stevenson. Santee is having second thoughts about joining a Joint Powers Authority, or JPA, with several North County cities to obtain more electrical power from renewable sources. The proposed entity is a Community Choice Aggregation Program for the cities, or the CCA, giving them the ability to buy more power from sources such as solar and wind. San Diego Gas and Electric would continue to deliver and maintain transmission lines and billing operations, but the CCA would be responsible for buying all power. Faced with a decision about the still-evolving JPA with the cities of Carlsbad, Del Mar, Solana Beach, and the County of San Diego, the Santee City Council on October 9th approved only one part of a two-step process, an ordinance authorizing the city to join the JPA. The council declined to vote on the agreement itself, with several members voicing concerns about startup costs and the disclosure of other information. An earlier motion to approve both steps, authorizing the city to join the JPA and adopting the JPA agreement itself, was defeated 3-2, with Mayor John Minto and council members Laura Koval and Rob McNellis opposed. Santee still has the ability to approve the JPA agreement at its next meeting on October 23rd. Councilwoman Laura Koval said because Santee's share to launch the JPA was about $200,000, she opposed the action. Koval also raised worries that Santee could face problems similar to those it's run into at the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, another JPA that is the San Diego Regional Transportation Planning Agency. There, coastal communities control the majority of votes, and often inland cities' needs are ignored, such as on a recent SANDAG vote to fund transit while cutting funding for freeway improvement projects on congested or dangerous highways in East County. McNellis said he likes much about the JPA, especially the idea of local control over energy purchases, but he criticized the lack of transparency and said recent numbers presented over expected profits, and when the city could use those profits, weren't the same as the figures presented in earlier meetings. Hired consultants said the JPA could be profitable after the first year of its launch in 2021, but at the October 9 meeting, they were told profits may not happen until 2 to 6 years after the launch. McNellis said, "It looks like we are being sold something rather than giving us all the facts and letting us make our own determination." Carlsbad City Manager Scott Chadwick said the difference in those numbers is due to a need to set aside some early revenue for a rate stabilization fund to pay for unexpected higher energy costs and possible increased rates charged by SDG&E. Consultants have said cities joining a JPA could obtain rates that are 2% below what SDG&E now charges and that those profits could fund various energy projects in the city, such as more electrical vehicle charging stations. McNellis also pressed one of the city's consultants to tell the story of Georgetown, Texas, which adopted a CCA and tried to buy 100% of its energy from renewable sources. Instead of saving millions of dollars, the city lost about $6 million in its first year and is now reportedly trying to exit several long-term renewable contracts. Minto said he disagrees with environmentalists advocating for a CCA, stating, "I don't agree with the urgency." But Councilman Stephen Houlihan said staying with the current model of buying energy from SDG&E is a death spiral, mainly because the company has signaled it's exiting the business in about 6 years. A majority of San Diego County cities are forming CCAs, convinced that the climate crisis is too great to ignore and that cities should do more to reduce ozone-depleting emissions. Under the proposed JPA, called the Clean Energy Alliance, Santee would have the ability to determine how much of its power comes from renewables. It would also have equal voting power with all members on most issues, including Carlsbad, which is about twice the size of Santee. Yet for certain issues, such as issuing debt or bonds and adding or removing a member, the JPA would require a two-thirds majority vote. Several council members said that they should wait to see what the county does regarding the JPA issue when supervisors are scheduled to vote on October 15th. These are deadly times for California mountain lions, also called cougars or pumas, Cal Matters reports. Over 100 mountain lions a year are killed by vehicles in California. In recent weeks, three mountain lions died trying to cross freeways in Los Angeles. One was killed on a freeway in San Mateo County, and another was killed crossing State Route 67 in Lakeside. Highways and sprawl development block mountain lions from being able to travel and find mates, which has caused dramatic declines in genetic diversity. Others are dying from ingesting rat poison. A recent government study found that over 90% of mountain lions tested had been exposed to supertoxic second-generation rodenticides, including a cougar in the Santa Monica Mountains that bled to death internally from rodent poison. Although hunting mountain lions is illegal in our state, around 100 are killed each year by people who obtain depredation permits after lions attack domestic animals, including livestock or pets. There are alternatives, such as large herding dogs to protect sheep, goats, or cattle, and keeping animals indoors in a barn or penned enclosure at night, when lions are typically active. Scientists predict that lions in Southern California and the Central Coast could disappear in the next 50 years unless we protect them. So in June, the Center for Biological Diversity and the Mountain Lion Foundation petitioned state officials to list Southern California and Central Coast cougars as threatened under the California Endangered Species Act. If the state agrees to list cougars as endangered species, the law would require state and local decision makers to protect them. State agencies, including Caltrans, would have a mandate to build wildlife crossings over or under some existing highways and include crossings in new projects. Counties would also need to coordinate with state officials to ensure that development projects do not harm mountain lions. Mountain lions go out of their way to avoid people, but even though most Californians will never see a cougar in the wild, we all benefit from their work as ecosystem engineers, wildlife experts say. The lions control deer populations and prevent overgrazing of sensitive vegetation, thus safeguarding California's biodiversity. Cougars' kills also provide food for other species, including the critically endangered California condor. Mountain lions even benefit human health and public safety. In the eastern U.S., where cougars are extinct, an overabundance of deer has resulted in increased tick-borne illnesses among humans, as well as more vehicle collisions with deer. Californians voted to ban sport hunting of mountain lions almost 30 years ago. But today, some of our mountain lion populations have lower rates of survival than hunted populations elsewhere. Fixing that requires more wildlife crossings, environmentalists say, an action which would make roads safer for mountain lions and also for people. Each year, hundreds of Californians are injured in vehicle-wildlife collisions, and 15 people died in 2017 and 2018 after striking wildlife. In July, a collision in Lake County killed a mountain lion and injured 9 people. But there is a solution. In Colorado and Wyoming, officials have built wildlife crossings over major highways. As a result, there has been up to a 95% reduction in vehicle collisions with wildlife on some highways. In California, however, critical crossings remain unfunded and unbuilt. Cal Matters concludes, as an environmental leader and the world's fifth largest economy, California can do better. The public interest news site concludes, state wildlife officials need to give cougar populations the endangered species protections they desperately need. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is John Fistier with a health alert. A brush mouse in Julian has tested positive for the potentially deadly hantavirus, prompting a warning from county health officials. Hantavirus causes severe respiratory illness and is fatal 38% of the time. Finding hantavirus during routine testing of local rodents is not uncommon in San Diego County, but fortunately you are not likely to be exposed as long as you keep wild rodents out of your home, garage, sheds, and other structures. Wild rodents, especially wild mice, are the main carriers of hantavirus, which is spread through rodent droppings. So county officials advise the public to never sweep or vacuum up rodent droppings, which could stir up hantavirus into the air where it can be inhaled, causing illness. Instead, if you must clean up after rodents, you should spray a 10% bleach solution or other disinfectant on contaminated areas and wait at least 10 minutes before cleaning with a mop or sponge soaked in a disinfectant. Wear rubber gloves and open windows to ventilate the area. When you're done, seal up contaminated debris and any dead rodents in double plastic bags before discarding, then wash gloves in a bleach solution, followed by soap and water, and throw the gloves away in a sealed plastic bag. Afterwards, wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water. For more information, you can call the County Department of Environmental Health at 858-694-2888. That's 694-2888.
During the 2003 Cedar Fire that destroyed many homes in the Crest community, some residents found themselves trapped in gridlock on La Cresta Road, the primary evacuation route. Now, after years of efforts to create a second evacuation route, on October 15th, supervisors approved acquiring easements from willing landowners over Suncrest Truck Trail for use as an emergency evacuation route for Crest residents. Supervisor Diane Jacob introduced the measure. In her written statement, she said, the combination of the community's location in a high fire hazard severity zone and inadequate evacuation routes creates a significant threat to public safety. The county has been working with the Crest Fire Safe Council, San Miguel Consolidated Fire Protection District, the Sheriff's Department, and the County Fire Authority to plan for additional evacuation routes. The plan also allocates $35,000 for the acquisitions using County Fire Authority funds. Reporting for East County Magazine from Crest on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Before the Gold Rush of 1849, the fur trade lured trappers and hunters to California. But times have changed. Now, opponents of animal cruelty have succeeded in passing a bill just signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom that makes California the first state in the U.S. to outlaw the sale, trade, gifting, or manufacturing of most animal furs and fur products, starting in 2023. The ban does not apply to used furs, nor to leather, cow hides, sheepskins, deer, or goat hides. Animals preserved through taxidermy are also exempt. Animal rights advocates have argued that animals raised for fur are often kept in squalid conditions and that killing methods of farm-raised animals, such as electrocution, are inhumane. Trapping wild animals inflicts cruelty and endangers native wildlife, supporters of the ban note. Advocates of the ban also note that faux fur products now resemble real furs, providing alternatives for consumers seeking a fur look for coats, purses, or other products. The National Humane Society issued a press release applauding Governor Newsom and state lawmakers for enacting the new law to protect animals. But Keith Kaplan, spokesman for the Fur Industry Council, criticized the ban as part of a radical vegan agenda, using fur as the first step to other bans on what we wear and eat. Anyone breaking the new law could be fined up to $500 for a first offense and $1,000 for repeat violations. Governor Newsom also signed two other animal protection acts. One outlaws trophy hunting of bobcats. The other bans most animals from circus acts, allowing only cats, dogs, and horses. There are several exemptions, including rodeos and animals used in educational programs. California voters have repeatedly voiced approval for some of the nation's strictest animal protection laws, including outlawing hunting of mountain lions and mandating more humane treatment of chickens raised for egg production or the poultry industry, a measure that drew broader support from voters than any prior ballot initiative. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
A trio of new election reform laws have been signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom. The bills were all supported by Common Cause, a government watchdog group dedicated to assure equal participation opportunities for everyone in our democracy. Assembly Bill 571 establishes campaign contribution limits of $4,700 in city and county elections. Some candidates for local office have been receiving up to six-figure contributions, Common Cause reports. The new law aims to make officials more accountable to all constituents, not just those with deep pockets. Assembly Bill 849, the Fair Maps Act, sets criteria for redistricting in cities and counties. It also requires more public engagement in the redistricting process and outlaws partisan gerrymandering at the local level. Last but not least, Senate Bill 72 is for Election Day registration at all polling sites in California, so that nobody loses their right to vote because they missed a registration deadline. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The city of La Mesa predicts a 13% increase in the number of residents over age 65 by the year 2030. So, with support from the San Diego Foundation, the County of San Diego, and AARP, the city has launched a Livable La Mesa initiative. Earlier this month, the La Mesa City Council approved the Livable La Mesa Action Plan to promote programs and changes that will strengthen the quality of life for older adults in the community. The plan outlines goals to make La Mesa a more livable community for all ages, especially older residents, over the next few years. Mayor Mark Arapostathis says he's proud to support the Livable La Mesa initiative and action plan, stating, "We aim to be a city that meets the challenges and opportunities of an aging population, so all ages can participate in a fulfilling community life and enjoy robust health and well-being." Livable La Mesa planning team members worked with the community for the past year through online surveys and community conversations. As a result, the city aims to improve livability for seniors and other residents in its outdoor spaces and public buildings, social and civic participation, housing, transportation, community information, health, and wellness. The initiative is an affiliate of the World Health Organization's Global Network of Age-Friendly States and Communities, an international effort launched in 2006. Currently, the global network includes over 41 countries and 847 cities, including nearly 400 in the U.S. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is a public service announcement from the City of El Cajon. If you see smoke coming out of sewer lines in El Cajon over the next month, don't worry. The city is testing part of its sewer system from mid-October through mid-November using a non-toxic, non-staining artificial smoke substance. The test will help locate possible leaks, defects, improper connections, and the source of stormwater infiltration into the sewer system. Mailers have been sent to homes and businesses where the testing will take place. The sewer testing is all part of the city's effort to ensure a safe and efficient wastewater collection system for El Cajon residents and businesses. Smoke testing has been used for over 30 years and is the industry standard to cost-effectively identify sewer line problems. During the testing period, plumes of the artificial smoke will be visible coming out of roof vents, manhole lids, streets, yards, and cracks. Crews will be on hand to identify and mark any problem areas. If you need more information, you can call the City of El Cajon at 619-441-1653.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features our own haunting Halloween party, Matilda the Musical in Spring Valley, On Golden Pond in La Mesa, a chamber music series at Cuyamaca College, Fall at the Farm in Julian, a pumpkin patch at Summers Past Farms, headliner concerts at the Magnolia Center in El Cajon, the Julian Autumn Jubilee, Borrego Days Festival and Parade, Pints for the Park, and a Green Homes Tour.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon, costume contests for people and pets at Bates Nut Farm, spooky campovers at Lake Jennings, a Halloween bash at Parkway Plaza, trick-or-treating at Grossmont Center, a cultural arts expo in El Cajon, the Mother Goose Parade, Pomegranate Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy, and Julian's Country Christmas.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to our very own East County Magazine Halloween Party. Our annual event takes place at a haunting house on Mount Helix on Saturday, October 26th from 4 to 8 p.m. Wear a costume to compete in our costume contest. Enjoy live music by Shay Schuyler and RSVP early to reserve space. For tickets and details, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org/HalloweenParty2019.
Young Actors Theater presents Matilda the Musical at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. The musical runs each weekend through October 27th. Inspired by the book by author Roald Dahl, the Tony Award-winning Matilda the Musical from the Royal Shakespeare Company revels in the anarchy of childhood, the power of imagination, and the inspiring story of a girl who dreams of a better life. Matilda has won 47 international awards and continues to thrill sold-out audiences of all ages around the world. For tickets, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
You're invited to step back in time at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, an authentic Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment from the early 1800s this weekend at the Mataguay Scout Camp in Santa Isabel. Relive history with demonstrations of primitive survival skills such as tool making, cooking, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder target shooting. Also enjoy music and more. You can also buy a medallion and earn a chance to win a bronze mountain man statue that is a reproduction of the original by artist Frederick Remington. Find details and directions at lagunamountainrendezvous.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents On Golden Pond, which opened in mid-October and runs through November 10th. The plot focuses on aging couple Ethel and Norman Thayer, who spend each summer at their home on Golden Pond. Through the years, they're visited by their daughter with her fiancé and his son. The play explores the often turbulent relationship the young woman shared with her father growing up and the difficulties faced by a couple in the twilight years of a long marriage. Tickets are available at lamplighterslamesa.com.
The Echo Chamber Music Series hosts 14 concerts at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Theater this season, featuring classical music performers such as Jason Vo, Bach Collegium, the Dolly Quartet, members of the San Diego Symphony, and other internationally acclaimed musicians who have performed across the globe. This season runs from fall of this year through June 4th of next year. Find a full list of performers and ticket information at echochambermusic.org.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend now through October 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hay rides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. There's also a seasonal farm store featuring country wares and more. You can get more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the UPIC link to find activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures will host its Julian Autumn Jubilee each weekend in October. Fort Cross is located on Highway 78 in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian. Hours are Saturdays 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays 11:15 a.m. to 5 p.m. all are welcome to enjoy visiting the You Pick Pumpkin Patch. Additional activities are available for a fee and packages are available. Options include cider pressing and tasting, mini pumpkin painting, a petting zoo, reptile show, hayride, hoedown, candle making, tire swings, archery, tomahawk throwing, and paintballs at the Ghost Town Slingshot Range. Guests are welcome to bring a picnic lunch to enjoy with views of Volcan Mountain. You can find more information at fortcross.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center in El Cajon, has a full season of stellar entertainment lined up. Concerts coming up include the legendary singer Engelbert Humperdinck, progressive metal band Dream Theater, Grammy Award-winning Mexican songwriter Ramon Ayala, salsa artist Willie Colon, and the world of dance live. For tickets and a full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The 52nd Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival in Borrego Springs will be held Friday through Sunday, October 18th through the 20th. This year's theme is Bloom in Borrego. The Borrego Days Parade will roll out at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 18th, including a multi-plane flyover before the parade begins. The parade itself features floats, Western trick-riding cowboys and their horses, marching bands, plus classic cars with the Borrego Springs queens and princesses. At Christmas Circle, you can visit booths offering artwork, handmade goods, crafts, and foods. There's also a carnival fun zone for kids and for adults, a beer garden, and live music to dance into the sunset and under the clear, starry night sky. For more information, visit borregodays.com.
And the Borrego Foundation is kicking off its fall season with the 4th annual Pints for the Park as part of Borrego Days on Saturday, October 19th from 5 to 7:30 p.m. The event includes tastes from microbreweries, live music and food from Carmelita's Mexican Grill and Cantina, all to benefit the foundation, which supports California's largest state park, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The event will be held at the mall in Borrego Springs, and tickets are available at theabf.org as an Anza Borrego Desert Foundation.
The San Diego Green Building Council, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable building and community practices in San Diego, will host its 10th annual Green Homes Tour on Saturday, October 19th and Sunday, October 20th. The tour has been expanded this year to 2 full days, showcasing a diverse collection of the most innovative, eco-friendly homes in our region. Saturday will include homes in Central San Diego, East County, and South County. Sunday will focus on homes in North County. Find more information at sdgreenhomestour.org.
HauntFest in downtown El Cajon is expected to draw about 40,000 visitors on Friday, October 25th from 5 to 10 p.m. The 8th annual HauntFest includes live music on 2 stages, costume contests on the Main Street stage, expanded carnival rides and games, candy challenge activities, a kids zone, face painting, performances by TNT dancers and the Arts in Motion crew and junior crew. There is also the St. Madeline Sophie's Center pumpkin patch, craft and game booths, an LED rock wall, inflatable jumps for kids, showings of the first 2 Harry Potter movies, and more. Find additional haunting details at hauntfest.org.
Summer's Past Farms in Flynn Springs has a pumpkin patch, corn maze, and inflatable jump for kids, along with a field of pumpkins in all shapes and sizes to choose from. The patch is open Thursday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. during October. Summer's Past Farms is located on Old Highway 80 in Flynn Springs, between El Cajon and Alpine. Find more information at summerspastfarms.com.
Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center has Halloween-themed events coming up, including a Howl-Loween doggy costume contest and parade on October 26th, and then a costume contest and parade for people on October 27th. Guests can enjoy music, food, and more. For information on these and other events, you can visit batesnutfarm.biz, B-I-Z.
Spooky stories and s'mores, campsite trick-or-treating, creepy crafts, and a campsite decorating contest are all part of Spooky Campoween at Lake Jennings the last 2 weekends in October. The grand prize in the costume contest is a camping weekend by the lake, complete with boat rental and fishing permits. For a full schedule of Spooky Campoween events, activities, and reservations, you can visit lakejennings.org.
You're invited to pack your camping gear for a wild and ghoulish overnight adventure at Lions, Tigers, and Bears Animal Sanctuary in Alpine on Friday night, October 25th, and Saturday morning, October 26th. camp under the stars alongside the rescued exotic animals. The fun begins Friday evening with pumpkin carving, campfire songs, s'mores, and hot cocoa, plus an animal trivia challenge. On Saturday morning, you can join a costume contest and watch the animals enjoy their stuffed pumpkin treats during the 10 a.m. pumpkin bash. Bring your camping gear, including tent, sleeping bag, flashlight or lantern, warm clothes and shoes, dinner, snacks, and breakfast, as well as a pumpkin or two to carve, and your costume. Guests must be age 3 or older for this event. For tickets, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights ends its season October 30th with Trunk or Treat, including music, treats, and a full street closure along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
You're invited to bring the family to Parkway Plaza Shopping Center's spooktacular Halloween bash on October 31st from 5 to 7 p.m. Trick-or-treating, complimentary photos, crafts, and carnival games are all included for ghosts and ghouls ages 12 and under. You can also show off your spooky costume and get ready for some monster madness. Get more information at shoppingparkwayplaza.com.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa has safe trick-or-treating for children on October 31st from 3 to 5 p.m. Youngsters in costumes can pick up trick-or-treat bags at guest services and get treats from all participating merchants. Learn more at grossmontcenter.com.
You're invited to discover local and international artists at the 2019 Cultural Art Expo. That's on Saturday, November 9th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Marriott in downtown El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live music by the Jazzilla Band, a local Latin jazz legend, savor food samples from noon to 2, visit a wine and beer garden, and enjoy artwork, including adobe sculptures by Enrique Aviles from Mexico City, fish carving sculptures by award-winning Bob Berry, works by local artist Grace Schleicher, plus workshops by local artist Barbara Young, and more. You can also stop by East County Magazine's booth at the Cultural Art Expo to meet local authors, artists, and our editor. This year, the event also draws inspiration from the Don't Give Up movement, which strives to help struggling people find hope and prevent suicides. The event honors the memory of local artist Nolan, who died at age 18. For tickets and details, you can visit artexpo@themarriott.com.
The Mother Goose Parade has been delighting children and families for 73 years. This year, the parade will roll out through downtown El Cajon on Sunday, November 24th, starting at 1 p.m. The parade features an array of floats, marching bands, equestrians, clowns, local celebrities, and Santa Claus to welcome in the start of the holiday season. You can find the parade route and details at mothergooseparade.org.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona continues its annual Thanksgiving season tradition with Pomegranate Days, a three-day weekend, November 29th through December 1st. Guests can enjoy feeding pomegranates to friendly camels, camel rides and games for kids, a Wild West turkey stampede with the farm's famous pardoned turkeys, and circus acts by the Russell Brothers family, including juggling, magic, and more. For reservations and more information, you can visit CamelDairy.com and click on the Events tab.
Julian Country Christmas will be held on November 30th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., with lighting of the town's huge living Christmas tree and the arrival of Santa Claus between 5:30 and 6 p.m. at Pioneer Park in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. Visitors can also enjoy shopping at boutique shops and craft stores for one-of-a-kind gifts at this annual event hosted by the Julian Chamber of Commerce.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the Calendar and Events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
an East County dentist is dead, and his husband is charged with murder. Sheriff deputies in the San Miguel Fire Department responded to a call reporting a man not breathing on September 17th. Despite the efforts of deputies and paramedics who attempted life-saving measures, Dr. Sanowski died shortly before 11 p.m. A judge has denied bail for Thomas Zupner, who was arrested at the couple's home that night and remains behind bars at the George Bailey County Detention Center in Otay Mesa. Dr. Sanowski had been a periodontist since 1989 with a practice near downtown El Cajon. The 65-year-old dentist collected cars and owned several pets. A family friend told the San Diego Union-Tribune that he was shocked by the news, recalling Dr. Sanowski as polite, pleasant, and soft-spoken. The district attorney and Zupner's defense lawyer, Paul Pfingst, have not disclosed details as to the cause of death or motive in the case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is Jonathan Getz. Be on the lookout for a stolen horse. No, not the galloping kind. A 12-foot-high rusted iron horse statue that weighs over 400 pounds was taken by thieves from the yard in front of the SS Tack and Feed store on Old Highway 80 in unincorporated El Cajon. Surveillance video shows the crooks making off with the purloined horse on a flatbed truck with a device that resembled a forklift around 2 a.m. late last week. The owner believes the thieves must have cased the place before the heist, since they came prepared to cut a chain and detach the statue from four iron stakes. The owner says she is sad and sick over the loss of the horse, valued at several thousand dollars, and hopes that tips from the public or surveillance video from neighboring businesses will lead to identification of the crooks and return of the stolen stallion statue. If you have any information on this heist, please call the San Diego County Sheriff's Department or contact the SS Tack and Feed store at 619-443-9211.
Sheriff's deputies from the Rancho San Diego station have arrested Richard Lechuga, a 29-year-old from San Diego, after a violent altercation on October 14th in Jamul. Deputies received a radio call asking for a welfare check on a man seen walking around a vehicle talking to himself on Skyline Truck Trail. They found Lechuga sitting in a vehicle. But when the deputies approached, Lechuga sprayed three of them with bear spray through an open window and then brandished a knife and what appeared to be a handgun, according to Lieutenant Joel Stranger. The subject then reportedly stabbed the sheriff's canine dog in the head and face. Deputies used shotgun rounds, pepper balls, and a taser to take Lechuga into custody without lethal force. The handgun was determined to be a pellet gun. The canine was taken to a local vet for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. Deputies were treated by the fire department on scene for their exposure to the bear spray. Lechuga was transported to a hospital for treatment of injuries that he sustained during his arrest. He's charged with felony assault with a deadly weapon on a peace officer, assaulting a police animal, and resisting arrest.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.